talked about how the King Cyrus of Persia was moved by God to send the Israelites back to Judah to rebuild the temple of Jerusalem. Now, there were a couple of kings between Cyrus and King Xerxes, so we kind of want to kind of put an underline under Xerxes in your head there. And then after Xerxes, there were a few other kings that we talked about last week. We talked about Darius and King Artaxerxes, of all Persian kings. The story of Esther, which is the story we're talking about today, it takes place right in the middle of the events that we talked about last week, during the reign of King Xerxes. So during that time, about 50,000 Israelites were returned to Jerusalem under the reign of King Cyrus. They had already been sent there, so during the time of King Xerxes, we had these Israelites there doing the things that we were talking about last week. They were rebuilding the temple and going through the different stories there. And so that happened, and there were a couple other kings, and then we have the story of Esther, and then there's a couple other kings that we talked about last week. So this kind of zooms in on some of the Israelites that did not return to Jerusalem with the first group that did. So there were some other Israelites that were still left in Persia. And this story is about those Israelites, the Israelites that did not return to Jerusalem yet. Some interesting facts about Esther. Esther's an interesting book. It's always a fun book to get into and read. And it's short enough you can read the whole story in one sitting, and just lots and lots of neat things that happened in Esther. But one thing that's interesting about Esther, as far as it being a book in the Bible, is Esther is one of the books, one of the two books in the Old Testament that does not mention the word God. God is not mentioned anywhere in the book of Esther. The word Lord or God do not show up at all in the whole book of Esther. The only other book in the Old Testament that does not mention God is the book of Song of Songs or the Song of Solomon. Another thing about Esther, which is kind of interesting because there are a lot of quotes in the New Testament from Old Testament books. Esther's never quoted in the New Testament. So Esther's a little bit of a standalone book. It's one of the only two books with women's names is the title, Esther and Ruth, and in the Old Testament. So the story starts with King Xerxes. He throws this huge banquet, a big party, and it lasts for 6 months. And the purpose of this banquet was to show off all of his wealth, his splendor, his glory, just the glory of his majesty. And this was the purpose of the banquet, the purpose of the party. The people that were there that were invited to this party, this six-month party, were the nobles, the officials, and the military leaders. He just wanted them to see how awesome he was. So after this six-month display of his earthly awesomeness, then he threw another party that lasted 7 days. And in this party, everyone was invited to come see how awesome he was. The garden where this banquet took place was decorated extravagantly. And we are told that the wine was served in goblets of gold, each one different from the other, each one unique. And the royal wine was abundant in keeping with the king's liberality. So 7 days, free alcohol on the king. You can imagine what this place looked like after 7 days. I mean, I'm kind of thinking Daytona Beach during spring break. I mean, it would just be a mess. 7 days, just this drunken mob. And on the seventh day, King Xerxes sends for his queen. So what do you think he was wanting to show about his queen to all of these drunken people? What do you think? I mean, maybe he wanted to present to them, he wanted them all to see her amazing intellect. She would come out and she would deliver a lecture on the pros and cons of nuclear energy for Persia. Or maybe it's that he wanted them to see just how sweet she was, the sweet personality that she had. And he wanted to display that before everyone. Or how caring or nurturing or supportive she was as the king's wife. It was none of these. He sent for her for one reason, and we're told because she was lovely to look at. So after he has had this display and he showed off all of his possessions, he brings out his trophy wife, just another possession to him, just another object. We're told when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. You want me to come and parade myself before a crazed mob of men after 7 straight days of Miller time? No, I don't think so. So the king, we're told the king became furious and he burned with anger. This made him look weak. and everyone's there. I mean, there's free alcohol on the king. It's going to draw a crowd. And so everyone's there. This makes him look weak. And so the king meets with his lawyers and his nobles to determine what must be done with Queen Vashti. Because, you know, this is of national importance. This is a national emergency. So he brings in the Supreme Court, his lawyers, his nobles. And, he, you know, isn't there a rule somewhere that says that you have to obey the king? I'm the king, for crying out loud. I mean, what can I do about this? So one of his nobles, they speak up and they say, Queen Vashti has done wrong, not only against the king, but also against all of the nobles and the peoples of all the provinces of King Xerxes. For the queen's conduct will become known to all the women. Uh-oh. And so they will despise their husbands and say, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she would not come. This very day, the Persian and Median women of the nobility who have heard about the queen's conduct will respond to all the king's nobles in the same way. There will be no end of disrespect and discord. This is going to be a mess if this gets out and you don't do something about this. So they decide what should be done is that he should write a decree that cannot be repealed, that Queen Vashti is never again to enter into the presence of the king. Isn't that kind of giving her what she wanted? He asked her, you know, no, I don't want to. And so he's, you know, it's a lifetime, you know, it's. So Vashti gets the adios and a new search for the queen begins. We're told the king's personal attendants proposed, let a search be made for beautiful young virgins for the king. And let the king appoint commissioners in every province. Now, you have to understand, there was a ton of provinces. If I remember right, I didn't throw this into my notes. I think it was 127 provinces. So they're saying, let the king appoint commissioners in every province. And this guy, I mean, Persia owned a huge amount of real estate. In every province of his realm to bring all these beautiful girls into the harem at the citadel of Susa. Let them be placed under the care of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women. And let beauty treatments be given to them. Then let the girl who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. The second half of this verse just, it always cracks me up. This advice appealed to the king. You think? I mean, that kind of goes without saying. This advice appealed to the king. Oh, that's a good idea. Duh. So he followed it. Let me see. Bring young, beautiful women and make them even more beautiful. It was a Miss Persia pageant. That's what it was. It was a beauty pageant. And so the prize, though, it was not just to wear the Miss Persia sash or the Miss Persia tiara. The prize was a real crown, a royal crown. It was to be the queen of Persia. So you know these fine young women were looking their finest. And this was the criteria for the queen, to be a hottie. That was it. I mean, can you believe that there was once a time when men were so superficial? A culture that elevated beauty and physical beauty and sexuality to such a level of importance. I mean, I know it's hard for us to imagine such a shallow culture. But I guess there was a day when that type of thing went on. You know, on a totally different topic, did you know that this past weekend down in Nashville, Tennessee, there was a two-day celebration put on by Sports Illustrated celebrating the release of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue? Two-day party down there celebrating this. And in addition to that, Sports Illustrated, they're working with the Travel Channel. And so starting tonight, for the next 5 days, the Travel Channel, and I'm not making this up, the Travel Channel is going to have a week called Beach Week. And each night, they're going to have a feature where they go behind the scenes of the making of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. So anyway, back to our topic. Where was I? Oh, yeah, that we're so far removed from such a time and culture that existed during the Persian rule under King Xerxes, where beauty was the only qualification for a queen. So shallow. So try and imagine, if you can, what it would be like to live in a culture like that. So the search begins, and Esther was one of the young, beautiful women who were selected to compete for the position of queen of Persia. Now, Esther was a Jew. She was an Israelite. And in addition to that, we also learn a little something about Esther, is that she was an orphan. And she was adopted by her cousin, Mordecai, who took care of her as though she were his very own daughter, as if he were her very own father. So Esther appeared before Haggai, and she won his favor. So she moves on to round two, and round two was being able to actually appear before the king. Now, ladies, I want to ask you something. How many of you have ever spent more than an hour getting ready for a date? Okay. Oh, come on, honesty. You've never spent more than an hour getting ready for a date? I'm finding that kind of hard to believe. Because I know there are ladies out there that have spent more than an hour getting ready for a date. In fact, there are ladies out there that have spent more time getting ready for the date than they actually spent on the date. And some of those ladies had more fun getting ready for the date than they did on the date themselves. So Esther prepared for this date with the king. And it wasn't just an hour. It wasn't a few hours. It wasn't days. It wasn't just months. It was a whole year. A whole year. She went through a year's worth of beauty treatments before appearing before the king. And then she finally got her chance to appear before the king, and he found her more attractive than any of the other women, and so she won the prize. Esther became queen of Persia in Vashti's place. So let's go back to Mordecai. One day, Mordecai was sitting by the king's gate, and Mordecai was Esther's cousin who took her in as his own daughter, as he would be her father, so he was like her cousin father or her father cousin. So Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, and he heard two men discussing an assassination plot on the king. And so with his connection to the queen, he reported it to Esther. Esther reported it to the king, and their plan was thwarted. And they were hung up on poles. Now, this is a form of execution that happens throughout the book of Esther, and there's a discrepancy there. Poles could mean that they were impaled on the poles, or poles could be referring to gallows where they were hung. Either way, they were what? They were dead. So anytime you see that in the book of Esther, it's referring to one of those two forms of death. They died. So Esther reported, when she reported the information to the king, she gave Mordecai credit for finding out the information. And that was recorded in the king's record book. And this is important a little later in the story. Another character comes into play. This man by the name of Haman. He rises to power and he's honored by King Xerxes. But Mordecai didn't care for him much. I don't know exactly what it was. Maybe it was just Haman's just pure arrogance that Mordecai couldn't stand. But we're told that Mordecai would not pay him honor by kneeling before him like everyone else did. The officials spoke to Mordecai about this many times. They reprimanded him, hey, this is what you do for an official of the king. But he would not give honor to Haman, no matter what had happened. So Haman was very insulted by this. And he found out about Mordecai's insubordinate behavior. And so after some digging, Haman found out that Mordecai was a Jew. And so he sought out to not just punish Mordecai, but to punish all of the Jews, the whole captive nation of the Jews that were remaining there in Persia. So Haman goes to the king and tells him that there's a group of people who need to be done away with in Persia. I mean, these people, they don't share the same customs. They don't fit in with the Persians. They won't obey the king's laws. And it would just be a good idea to get rid of these people. You know, so this is a genocide. That's what it is. So he says, if it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them. And I will put 10,000 talents of silver into the royal treasury. That's a lot of money. Into the royal treasury for the men who carry out this business. So the king took a signet ring from his finger and he gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. Keep the money, said King Haman, and do with the people as you please. So the king tells Haman, just keep your money. Do whatever. Whatever. This is the king's attitude. I mean, and even when he was having problems with King Vashti, he couldn't really come up with hey, I need some help. This king he doesn't seem to be able to handle his position of authority very well. He's just very negligent in his position of authority. Whatever. You want to kill a big group of people? All right, go for it. You don't even have to pay, for the people to go and do this. So word gets out about this genocide, and when Mordecai hears this, what was about to happen. And we're told that he tore his clothes, he put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the city wailing loudly and bitterly. But he only went as far as the king's gate, because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter in. In every province to which the edict and order of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So this, Mordecai's got a bit of a protest here, very visible, and stirs up quite a bit of attention about this. So Esther finds out what's troubling Mordecai through one of the servants that the king had appointed to her. And Mordecai then sends a message to her, asking her to go to the king. Use your position. Go to the king and beg for mercy for our people. But she sent word back to him. She said, if I go before the king, if I approach the king without being summoned, then there's a good chance that I would be put to death. The only exception to that is if someone came to the king when they weren't asked to come to the king, the king could extend to them the golden scepter, and that would be a sign that he would spare their life and he would allow them to appear before them. So when the servant told Mordecai what Esther's response was, Mordecai said, oh, well, that's rough. Then never mind. No. Mordecai says, you got to consider the risk here. And is it worth it? Look at what you're risking. And I know it's your life, but it's all of the Jewish nation. It's all of us here. He says, do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows, and this is just for me, and I think for many people, this is the spotlight. This is the thesis statement for the book of Esther. This is the verse right here. For who knows, and who knows, but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this. Who knows? Maybe this is the exact reason. Maybe you're not to become queen just to become queen. Maybe you're to become queen to save the Jews. Maybe this is why God made you such a beautiful woman. Maybe this is why God gifted you in the way that he gifted you. So Mordecai speaks into Esther's life. Maybe there's a bigger reason. Esther replies. She says, go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, day or night, and I and my maids will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. So pray for me. Pray for me. I'll do this, but pray for me. So Esther goes before the king, and he extends the golden scepter. Whew. I mean, that meant that she would be spared, that she wasn't going to die. She was allowed into his presence. And he said, what is it, Queen Esther? What would you like for me to do for you? And so she said that she has prepared a banquet. You know, she knew this guy. I mean, this guy's into parties. He likes the banquets. So she says, hey, I've got a little private party I want to invite you to. I want to invite you, and I want to invite Haman to come and be my guest at this banquet, this little party, this soiree I've cooked up. So the king and Haman went to this banquet, and at the banquet, the king asks, he says, Esther, what is it? What would you like for me to do to you? For you. And then Esther invites them back for another meal. She says, I want to invite you back for another meal. Come on back, and we'll have another party, we'll have another banquet, and then at this next meal, I'll tell you what I would like for you to do for me. And so they agreed to return to the second banquet. Now, Haman being the guy that he is just on cloud nine. I mean, of all the people and all of the officials and the military leaders and the nobles, he was the one that was invited to come and have dinner with the king and the queen at this very special dinner. But being on cloud nine, he passed by the gate, and who was at the gate? Mordecai, that guy. Oh, that Jew, I can't wait to get rid of him. And he's in sackcloth, and he's ashes, and he will not show honor to Haman, and this just ruins Haman's day. And Haman's got the whole plan for this genocide in place. It's rolling. All he has to do is wait for it to happen, and Mordecai's going to be out of the picture. But it's just not enough for him. Seeing him took him from this cloud nine experience just all the way down. He goes home. He's really been out of shape. He talks it over with his friends and his wife. And they suggest that he set up a pole or a gallows. There's that word again. 75 feet high. Where Mordecai would be killed on. So he'd either be impaled or he'd be hung. Either way, it meant he'd be dead. Haman liked this idea. Well, later that night, the king could not sleep. So he asked for the book of records to be read to him. And so it just so happened, you know, that the existence of God, that the movement of God in this book is just such an underlying thing, just to see how some of these things, they come into place. Esther is the queen for such a time as this, you know, and this situation here. Just so happens that when the book of records is opened and the story that's read to him is a story about how Mordecai had thwarted the assassination attempt and had reported that to the king. And the king asked, has anything been done for this man? He saved my life. Has anything been done to honor this man? And so Haman was out in the court, and so the king called him in. He said, hey, Haman, come on in. And he asked him, he says, what should be done for the man the king delights to honor? Now Haman thought to himself, who is there that the king would like to honor would rather honor than me? So he's thinking, the king's just wanting to figure out what I want. You know, what do you want for your birthday? You know, he's wanting to think, all right, we're going to make this good. So he answered the king, for the man the king delights to honor, wink, wink, have them bring a royal robe the king has worn. And a horse, yeah, a horse that the king has ridden, and what else? Let me see here, a royal crest placed on his head. Then let the robe and the horse be entrusted to one of the king's most noble princes. Let them robe the man the king delights to honor and lead him on the horse through the city streets, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man the king delights to honor. So he's cooking all this up, thinking, oh, what would it just be, the robe and the horse? Oh, this is going to be great. So the king says, go at once, the king commanded Haman. Get the robe and the horse and do just what you have suggested for Mordecai the Jew. What an awful day. What an awful day for Haman. It doesn't get better. So he told him to go and do this for Mordecai the Jew, who sits at the king's gate. Do not neglect anything you've recommended. So Haman got the robe and the horse, and he rode Mordecai and led him on horseback through the city streets, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man the king delights to honor. Man, how awful for Haman. He feels terrible. He's just beyond depressed. Goes home, he covers his head in grief, tells his friends and his wife about all that had happened, how awful he feels. And while they're still talking, his ride came to take him to this second special party, special private banquet for the king and queen. So he has to get himself together and then head off to this special dinner. So the second dinner, the king asks Esther, what is it? What is it I can do for you? What do you want? Then Queen Esther answered, if I found favor with you, O king, and if it pleases your majesty, grant me my life. This is my petition, and spare my people. This is my request. For I and my people have been sold for destruction and slaughter and annihilation. If it had merely been sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet because no such distress would justify disturbing the king. King Xerxes asks Queen Esther, who is he? Who is the man who dared to do such a thing? Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this vile Haman. Da-da-da! It just keeps getting worse for this guy. Sorry, it's about to end, but it's going to get even worse. So the king gets so upset that he leaves the room. He's so mad he can't stand to be in the same room. And so while the king is gone, Haman begs Esther for his life. And I mean, just picture this. She's reclining on a couch, and he's there begging for her, you know, mercy, that she would do something. And just that time when he's, you know, just right there, just begging, The king walks in. Not good. He says, will he even molest the queen while she is with me in the house? It's done. It's over. So the king finds out that there's a 75-foot gallows or pole outside of Haman's house, the pole that was meant for Mordecai. And so the king has Haman hung on the gallows or impaled on that pole. And it's over. Mordecai is then raised to Haman's position with the king. Esther is given Haman's estate. I hope they took Haman down. That would not. So Mordecai and Esther are given permission to write a decree that allowed the Jews to defend themselves if they were attacked from Haman's decree for genocide. Haman's decree was written and sealed with the signet ring in such a way that it could not be repealed. It could not be changed. It was there. These people had permission to kill the Jews. So Esther and Mordecai wrote another law to go on with that law that says, okay, if they attack, they're allowed to defend themselves. And not just to defend themselves. This isn't just a conceal and carry, you know, to protect yourself if someone's coming after you. This is a total annihilation of anyone who was associated with the people who attacked. They were allowed to just annihilate them, their women and their children, and to plunder their wealth and riches. And so when some of the people attacked, I mean, you'd think that would be enough of a deterrent. Stay away, because we have permission to annihilate you. Kill your kids, your women. But some people, they hated the Jews that much that they took advantage of this, the first edict, and they attacked. And the Jews overpowered them, and they annihilated them. Esther and Mordecai, then, they have the rest of Haman's sons killed, and they live happily ever after. Such a great story. Pull out your bulletin notes. Let's talk just a moment about position. This story is all about position. We've got some good examples of position and some not so good examples of how to use position. Let's look at a couple of the bad examples to start off with. So bad uses of position. King Xerxes, for instance. King Xerxes. To occupy a position of power negligently. This guy just was not. He was a party animal. He wasn't much of a king. You know, sure, you want to go kill a whole bunch of people. Yeah, whatever. Go for it, Haman. It's, you know, here's my ring. Just bring it back when you're done. That's a big deal. So you can have a position of power, and you can occupy that position negligently. I want you to think about what position you are in. What type of power has been given to you in whatever position you're in? If it's at work, maybe you're in a position of power at work. How are you handling that position? How are you holding that position of power? Is it responsibly? Is it negligently? Maybe it's at your home. You know, men here, husbands, dads, you are the man of the house. You are commissioned by God to lead your house spiritually. That is a position of power. How are you doing with that position of power? Are you handling it responsibly or negligently? If you're a parent, you've been entrusted by God in a position of power over your children to train them, to lead them, to be an example for them. Are you occupying that position of power with responsibility or negligently? It's King Xerxes. What about Haman? Haman was another negative example of a bad use of a position. Haman, he was an example of what it's like to occupy a position of influence selfishly. Just everything was about Haman to Haman. Everything, it's all about me. It's all about me. You know, you might not realize it, but you have various people in your life that you have influence over, that you are influential to. You've got friends that you have influence with. You have family members that you have influence with. You have coworkers that you have influence with. Neighbors. Today's a good day to think about how we use our position of influence. How we influence those around us. Are we using that position of influence for me? What can I get? Is it used to get something that you want? Is it used in a self-serving way? be honest with yourself. I can't hear your thoughts, and I don't know if they would be true or false, but God knows your thoughts, and he knows if they are true or false. I think of a lot of us, we are disgusted with Haman. And I think the reason is because it hits so close to home. I think a lot of us see a little bit of ourselves inside of Haman and these selfish actions. And we know that it's a bad decision to use a position of influence selfishly, but we still do it. It's a bad use of position. So those are two bad uses of position. What about good uses of position? Good uses of position. Let's look at Mordecai. Mordecai spoke into Esther's life. So let's write that down. Mordecai, to speak into the lives of people who look up to you. To speak into the lives of people who look up to you. Esther looked up to Mordecai as if he were her own father. She was the queen, and yet she looked up to Mordecai because they had a history. They had a relationship. He had invested into her. Who are you investing into? Who are you speaking words of life into? Here's some examples based off of Mordecai of things that we can do to speak life into people. We can support them. I believe in you. Man, those words go a long way, especially from someone who you look up to and they share that to you. I believe in you. Someone you respect, I believe in you. Who needs to hear those words from you today? Who needs to hear from you that you support them, that you believe in them? You challenge them. Is it worth the risk? And if so, are you willing to take the risk? Are you willing to risk it? You're close enough to someone to call them out, and not so in a condescending way, not in a way that tears them down, but in a way that's in line with the upper story, the bigger story. In Esther's case, Mordecai says it's a risk to go before the king. I get that. But you're going to get found out eventually. All the rest of the Jews are going to be leveled. It's worth the risk. Are you willing to take the risk? Who in your life needs that extra boost of challenge? It's a risk, but it's worth the risk. Who needs to hear that from you? You encourage them. You speak life into them by encouraging them. Encourage them. You are made for something bigger. Mordecai tells Esther, maybe you're in this position for something bigger than queen. And Persia was a huge empire. Maybe you're here for something bigger than queen. Bigger than your beauty. Bigger than your position. Who needs to hear that from you today? Who needs to hear that from you this week? That you can encourage someone and invest into someone. Mordecai's investment into Esther, it had a serious return. It saved the Jews. You never know what the return is going to be on the investments that you invest into people. Encourage someone. Encourage someone that looks up to you this week. And last, let's look at Esther's position. Esther's position, to look for the purpose in the position God has placed you in. Placed you in. To look for the purpose in the position. Don't let the position distract you from finding the purpose. The purpose is always going to be more important than the position. And when the position becomes more important than the purpose, you got some problems. So write this down. You're going to need to add a word. Somehow this missed my proofreading when I looked over it. The position is simply the vehicle. The purpose is not. Sorry, no, that is correct. When I proofread it this morning, it looked wrong. It is correct. The position, it's not right up on the screen, it's right in your bulletins. I'm going to have to fix that. The position is simply the vehicle. The purpose is the destination. Somehow I saw something wrong there. The position is the vehicle. It's how you get. It's the purpose that's the destination, not the other way around. Don't let the position be the destination. So what purpose has God got for you in your current position? Maybe that's something to talk to God about right now. There are good uses and bad uses of position. Let's be reminded today of those so that we can make better use of whatever position God has us in.